Show.
You're listening to your good news station, WCNO Palm City.
Welcome to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, investment advisor representative, licensed insurance agent, and fiduciary. This is a live show, and I'll be here to take your calls at 772-221-1100 with any of your financial concerns. Again, that's 772-221-1100. Good afternoon, friends. This is Mindy Molina, and you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show here on WCNO 89.9 FM. This is Wednesday, and every Wednesday from 4 to 5, you can tune in and learn anything and everything that I can possibly teach you about finances, financial planning, having your affairs in order, any insight, any knowledge, any tips that I can give you to, or even to encourage you to take action. It's so important, and it's good to have a plan, okay? You want to plan before the money comes. And I believe truly that if you have a plan and you go before the Lord, he's going to help you fulfill that plan. But if you don't have a plan, what are you even asking for? Proverbs 15:22 says, plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. I'm going to read that one more time. Proverbs 15:22. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. I am just one piece of the puzzle when it comes to your household and your future. I'm just one piece of that puzzle as a financial advisor, as a wealth manager. And there's other pieces of that puzzle. One might be your tax advisor, right? Your taxes. You really want a tax advisor that's forward looking, someone who's going to give you advice on how to approach the following year, not just file taxes based off what you did and then tell you what you should have done. An advisor gives you advice on how to approach the forthcoming, so that way you're making wise decisions as you go along versus paying for the mistakes you made or missing opportunities. So you want to have a good tax advisor. You want to have a good financial advisor. You want a team of advisors that are paid based on your success, not paid based on what they sell you. Okay? There's two different things. You could be a broker who sells products, or you could be a true advisor who's paid to give advice and to guide and lead you into the prosperity that God has in store for you. So having a good financial advisor, a good tax advisor is important. So let me ask you, what's one other type of advisor that you really, really need? Legal counsel. Having good legal counsel to help you get your affairs in order is so important. And I'm so excited to tell you that in the studio today, I have just that. I have finally got my wonderful estate attorney that I've been working with, you know, Alex Gillen in the studio. Alex, say hello.
Hi, Mindy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks so much for coming. And hopefully you see that live radio is not that intimidating and you can enjoy it, because I'd love to have you on as much as possible, because just as much information as I dump on the show and have been for years now, there's so much information that you can contribute that people can learn from. And I really appreciate you being here, and I'm sure my listeners do too. So before I get started with Alex and really teach you about the legalities of your financial plan, I have to say, so for years, I've been in this industry for decades, and it was really difficult finding an estate attorney, an attorney that I could truly trust would take good care of my clients at an affordable, reasonable price, and that would follow through and deliver the documentation and the whole process. Because what happens is it's very easy for people to procrastinate their financial plans, including legal documents. It's just one of those things. So it's important that as an advisor, we don't allow that to happen. Not only do we have to work to plan for you, we have to work to see to it that these things get implemented. And so that when you leave us, we know everything is in order and you're good to go. But so many times that's not how it works. There's loose ends, and the attorney didn't follow up, or the financial advisor didn't follow up, or they didn't communicate, right? The attorney says, oh, these accounts need to be retitled to this, but then that information never makes it back to the financial advisor. So this collaboration, what we call the retirement roundtable, having a CPA advisor, having myself as the wealth manager, having Alex as the estate attorney, we have Susan who handles our Medicare, having these people involved and able to collaborate around one family is so huge, because it takes the burden off of you to communicate and see to it that all of these things happen. And it's not really fair, because then you're trying to control something that you may or may not understand, and you may not know what you don't know. Whereas your advisors, that's what we're paid to do. So I'm excited to have Alex here today to talk about the legalities of financial planning, estate planning. I know you do some other stuff. You're not just an estate attorney. What other types of law?
We do real estate, like real estate transactions. So you're buying and selling a house,
okay.
The title work, the closing, things like that. We also do some business work. So setting up your LLC or your corporation. And some contracts associated with it. So it's the blanket's called transactional in the biz.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's a lot of paperwork.
Okay. Good. So today we're going to touch on estate planning. And for me, it's about encouraging people to take action, get the documents in place. And if you had to say, what do you think is the biggest reason that people don't have it? So I'm sure there's plenty of people listening today that don't have any documents. They don't have a will. They don't have a trust, health surrogate. Why do you think that happens?
It's a tough subject, thinking about and planning for incapacitation or, when we leave this earth, as far as, what I want to happen with my belongings, my possessions. So kind of sometimes I think there's a mental block for people. You just don't want to have to go through all these thoughts. Mm-hmm. So that can be part of it. Sometimes I think people are, not too excited about, talking about this with somebody.
Right.
They maybe just met or don't really know. So I think there's, you come into someone's office and you say, here's everything that's, chaotic in my life. Mm-hmm. Here's what I have to plan for. It's nice to meet you. I mean, so it's just, you're kind of getting into, really personal details. But, there are a lot of good professional attorneys out there who can help. And it is all confidential. So, folks shouldn't have to worry about that, as long as it's not a future crime. It's all privileged, an attorney-client privilege. And, most people walk out, I would say 75% of the time, someone says, and it happened today, I feel such a relief to have this done and set up. And it's said to be a gift to the family. Because the hardest, so we administer estates after people pass, administer trust after people pass. The court administration process is called probate. Social media is filled with things on probate and trusts and asset protection. And, a lot of it is either confusing or perhaps not applicable in Florida. Mm-hmm. But we often get folks coming in and saying, I heard this or I heard that, is this what I should do? And it's like, well, maybe, but it kind of takes a comprehensive evaluation. I would say, at least a quarter of the percent of time what someone says they want to have, they actually don't want to have.
Right.
So, we get a lot of people calling and saying, my neighbor told me I need an irrevocable trust. And it's like, well, are you sure about that? Because,
yeah.
Whatever you would be putting into that trust, you would no longer own. And
right.
And so, that usually gives people pause. So there can be, I think, social media occasionally or often perhaps can confuse people more on some of these issues than talking to a professional.
So I call that analysis paralysis. I feel like a lot of times people, they see topics, they see a concept, and they think, okay, I need that. And where you're different versus someone just coming in and saying, I need to get a will, or I need a trust. And I get this all the time with the trust. I need a trust. And I'm like, well, after, I mean, I'm looking at all of their like you, we go very deep. We get really intimate with all of their finances and everything going on in their life. And oftentimes I'm like, I don't really think you need a trust. And that was something that I really respected about you, is that you weren't just a trust salesman, because obviously a trust is more expensive. It's more involved. It's more lucrative for you as an attorney and any attorney, but you really are very honest and forthcoming and saying, you don't need that. There's no reason for you to pay for that. We can do it this way, and this is the best way.
Well, thank you, Mindy.
Honesty and integrity in this industry is really important to me, and I know it's important to people. So to spot that in you is one of the reasons I was like, okay, Alex is my guy. And but people do get confused, and one big thing is going back to that. Do I need a will, or do I need a trust? I think when some, that's the answer to that question is, you need an appointment with Alex.
Thank you, Mindy.
There's not a blanket answer. You need an appointment with Alex. You need to sit down with Alex, let him, you know, get an idea of what it is you have going on. What is your situation? What are the details of your life? What's important to you? And then he can tell you, do you need a will or a trust? He can tell you what you need. And oftentimes it's so much more affordable than people realize. But one of the things I'll say about the cost is, it's not about what you're spending today. It's about what you're saving in your estate. The comparison is unrefutable. It's so much more money to just have these documents in place. What are the documents you think are most important?
Yeah. So, I mean, to follow up on your point there, I think, you know, there are certainly instances where spending the money to have a good durable power of attorney is going to be so much less expensive than having to go through a guardianship, if you had to do that, that document alone can make the entire thing worth it. If you're, you know, unfortunately have a neurodegenerative disease like Alzheimer's or ALS, and you lose this capacity necessary to contract, you know, then all of a sudden you can be in a real bind. And so we take it very seriously, those rights of an individual. And so to pull them away from them involuntarily is a very robust and expensive process, the guardianship process. So, you know, avoiding things like guardianship.
How could you avoid that?
Having a good durable power of attorney. A durable power of attorney is giving someone most of the powers you have just by virtue of being you. So you can buy and sell property, you know, access medical records, hire and fire, conduct lawsuits. I mean, you name it, you can do it.
So quick question about that, a durable power of attorney. Let's just say, just to put it into perspective, a person comes in, schedules an appointment with you and says, this is all I want. I just want this one document. I know that probably wouldn't happen, but if they did, what do you think is the range of cost?
That's always going to depend. We typically do not do individual documents like that. We'll typically do a package. Mm-hmm. The pricing kind of depends on the time involved. It's all fundamentally a time calculation. But we try to keep it reasonable. We try to stay competitive with the market. You can certainly, you know, call around and ask people different questions.
Right, on cost. But is it like tens of thousands of dollars nowadays? Is it hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars?
Yeah, I think, you know, it can be tens of thousands of dollars depending on the firm you go to. But I think most firms in this area, are considerably less than that. I think, you know, $1,000 and below for a will package, you know, with a will, durable power of attorney, healthcare surrogate, and living will. I think, you know, there's
that's
definitely
very reasonable
folks offering that. And you know, the trusts go up, and trusts, you know, can have many different features and many different, you know, customizations.
Advanced.
Yeah. And so it really depends on what your goals are, what your family is like, what your concerns are, what your assets are.
Well, really for me, for someone listening that is driving home from work, has three kids at home and a wife or a husband and doesn't have any of these documents, just wanted to kind of give them an idea of like, look, for very low amount, all of this can be handled and taken care of. It's not like you have to mortgage your house to get this done. And it has to be prioritized.
Yeah.
It's really, really important because, I mean, look at me, for example. My brother just passed away at 45 years old. That's so young. Do you think that we were planning for him to die? No. We were planning for him to live. We planned to live. But you're right. It's uncomfortable to say, okay, but what if? Plan to live, but still have these, live with these documents in place. Because even if you get hurt, right? Even if you could be getting a car accident and wish you had a power, your family's going to wish you had a power of attorney. Because when you don't die, it creates a whole other wave of problems.
Sure.
Plus your children, right?
Yeah. And I think the planning changes over the season of a life. And so for parents with young children, you know, most times the biggest concern is, you know, less about how do I, you know, avoid probate or how do I, you know, maximize tax efficiencies or something like that. And is more about, you know, if I pass away and my child's other parent passes away, you know, who's going to have custody of our children? Mm-hmm. Is that same person going to have custody of our children and of our property? You know, or I have a sister that would be great at managing the children, right? Being the parent in place, but that person maybe isn't great at managing the finances. So maybe I want to put my brother-in-law as the other person or something like that, or my friend. So making those decisions as opposed to having a court make those decisions, having a judge make those decisions. And I think, you know, I obviously can't speak for all judges, but I think, you know, folks would rather have the family, the parents make the decision than third parties who are forced to make the decision. So for parents of children, minor children, having good, you know, guardians of the person.
This is my godmother. This is my godfather.
It could be the same person.
How often is that actually legalized?
Well, it's not unless you fill out the proper paperwork. I can have a godmother, but if I don't have the document that says that's who my parents wanted me to have, then it's not going to hold up.
It's just a word.
It's just a title. Yeah.
So what, you know, with so many split families now, what about protecting the rights of, so let's just use myself for example, and the boy's dad and I get along great. And, you know, he loves my family. I could never imagine that he would deny them that relationship with my children. God forbid something happens to me or vice versa. But how do you legally protect that? Because that's not always the case. Because if something were to happen to him, I have full custody of the boys, right? So I have final say. How do you protect the rights of their, like, his family?
That's a good question. You're kind of drifting more into family law than estate planning.
Okay.
But, you know, there is, I believe, in Florida, and I have to look it up on the break, a grandparents' rights bill. But, yeah, it gets murky quickly.
It can get advanced.
Yeah. But I think, you know, naming who is going to have custody of your children is just very, very important if that ever happened. And for most, you know, people with minor children, that's your biggest thought at that season of life. As you get older, you know, the planning, in my view, for a lot of people, a high percentage, changes as, you know, if they've been married for, you know, 40 or 50 years, and then all of a sudden one spouse passes away, the planning can change a bit because so many things are jointly owned and have the right of survivorship to them. So after the first person passes away, the survivor becomes the sole owner.
Well, let's get into titling in this next segment. I think that'll be a good thing. I'm kind of dancing you all over. But we'll, so because titling is so important, and I think you have a great way of explaining, you know, how that can benefit or hurt family. But this is the Mindy Molina Show on WCNO 89.9 FM. You're listening to Mindy Molina, and I have my guest and estate attorney, Alex Gillen, on. If you have questions or if you don't have the right documents, what you can do right now is you can text 561-729-2778. Again, 561-729-2778. Text your email, text your name, and we will reach out to you to get you in touch with Alex and help you get the proper documentation that you and your family need to have. This is your call to action to no longer procrastinate and put this off. A simple text, and we will take the bulls by the horn, as they say, and continue this journey with you until we see it to an end. But text again, 561-729-2778. Text your name and your email address, and we will reach out to you. You can also go on my website at www.mindymolina.com. You can schedule a phone call. You can schedule a Zoom. You can schedule an in-office meeting. And we will, again, help you facilitate all of the right legal documentation that you need. So, Alex, let's talk about titling and why it matters. And we'll kind of go off of the start with the scenario of husband and wife that are retired and have their estate and their different, you know, they have their IRAs, they have their brokerage accounts, they have their homes, they have their cars. How much does it really matter how things are titled? Should they be titled in a trust? Should they not? What are the benefits of it? I'll give you free rein to just talk about whatever is on your mind.
So the number one answer in law is it depends. And,
yes.
And that is the answer there as well. It really does depend. And the way we approach it is we look at every asset. And we come up with a plan for each asset. And then based on the nature of the assets, you know, we say, all right, who owns it today? Who do we want to own it next? And then how are we getting there? And so, you know, we kind of do that and come up with a different plan. And based on that, we say, all right, well, you're better off with the trust, or you're better off with a will, or, you know, you could have a ladybird deed perhaps, though I prefer trust over ladybird deeds for a variety of reasons.
It does matter.
It does matter. It's actually one of the biggest things. And so, you know, sometimes we'll see, you know, a spouse, a married couple, one passes away and they had an account that was just in their name, and the death was unexpected, and the survivor is grieving considerably. And they go to the bank to try to get the funds out, and the bank's like, I'm sorry, you don't have access to this account. This account is now frozen. It was in the name of the decedent, the person who passed away, and we can't help you. You have to go to the probate court. And that really does not sit well with the surviving spouse, because they're already dealing with so much.
And I would think people just assume that because they're married, that they have access.
It's a great point. We do not assume things in our system. In our system, we have to prove who the next owner is. There are some instances where people can have rights. If married couples without prenuptial agreements, minor children, those folks can have some rights. But like adult children don't have a right to inherit. So if you go to the bank and say, well, you know, that was my mother's account, I'm the only child, you know, they don't know if you're the only child. They don't know if your, you know, mother left everything to the church.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know, you know, what what's going on, you know, in your mother's life. And so they can't just assume, and they're not going to take risk. So because of that, you have to go to the probate court. And so, you know, what the probate court essentially is you're saying, this is an asset of a person who's passed away, and here's, you know, evidence that they passed away, and they either did or did not have a will. And, you know, based on what these assets are, these were the assets in this person's name. And so if we have a will, then we say, well, is it a valid will? Right. You know, was it done correctly? Okay, and then who are the recipients? And then has everyone gotten their notice? It's a very formal, you know, court-supervised transfer of assets. If you don't have a will, then you take a look and you say, well, what do the state statutes say? Because all states have an interest in finding who the next owner is of an asset after a person passes away. But, you know, we hear a lot, you know, I don't want the state to get all my money. And it's like, well, you know, oftentimes that won't be the case. I mean, it can happen for sure. But, you know, if a parent passes away, not survived by a spouse, you know, unmarried and has two children, those two children are going to inherit equally. And that's called the intestate statutes, you know, that kind of give a lot of conditional statements. So it's, you know, well, was the person married or were they not? Did they have children? Were the children from the same relationship or from different relationships? And you kind of keep working down until you get down to see who the person's people are that would inherit. And then, you know, if there's no children, then you say, well, do they have parents? Well, who was the survivor? And then they say, well, are there, you know, siblings or are there nieces and nephews? And you kind of spider through the family tree. So that's what happens when you don't have a will.
In a situation like that, that it does go through probate, what does probate cost? How much does that impact the overall estate?
It depends. it's you know, it's a formal process. In Florida, for the formal estate administration, there's different levels of it. For the formal estate administration, those can only be done by an attorney. You can't do it yourself. For the summary estate administration, which is for assets less than $75,000, those are you're able to, you know, do them in yourselves in theory. I don't know how easy that is for the average person. I don't know that I could have done it before I started practicing in this area, having graduated from law school. You know, the clerks typically aren't there to provide advice. They're there to, you know, the clerk of the courts. So, you know, usually you have to get it. There's different ways to bill on it, and it's a hard thing.
So the cost of probate goes, that money goes to the attorneys, not the actual court, or both?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it like that, the probate process is subsidized. You pay a filing fee, and then you get access to the court staff and the judge, you know, to process everything, to review everything and issue orders. But your cost on that is, you know, $300, $400. So, I mean, relative to the real cost, most of the fees are going towards expenses of the estate administration, things like putting a notice to creditors in the paper, and attorney fees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then typically, the person serving as the personal representative, other states call it the executor, but we call it the personal representative. Typically that person also has a fee because it is a lot of work. It's a lot of work to kind of, you know, wind up somebody's life legally. You know, if you think of, you know, all the complexity of, say, a real estate transaction, all the paperwork involved, all the boxes that have to be checked. You know, law is similar because, you know, creditors have rights in our system. You know, the taxing authorities have to be paid. The beneficiaries have rights. There's a lot to it, and it's a you know, big potential transfer of wealth, and certainly over a macro view, it's a very big transfer of wealth. So it's very formal. Some people can be frustrated with it for sure, and I get that. I mean, there's rarely perfect laws, but overall, I think it's a pretty good system. Mm-hmm. Now, a critic would say, well, that's because you're a lawyer and you're making money off of that system. I just don't know what the alternative would be to saying, okay, this person owns it, they've passed, here are the next owners. It just has to be formal. With this complexity we have in the society today.
Well, the alternative would be that they have the proper plan in place, they have the proper documentation, so they don't have to go down this rabbit hole called probate.
Well, and you know, complete, like sometimes we get folks and they'll say, well, why should there be any cost? And it's like, well, I hear you, but it's probably not realistic in the complexity of today's world to say, you know, we're going to take everything someone owned and give it to someone else or some other entity or something like that and have no cost. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can minimize it for sure. And you can plan well, and the trust can help avoid probate, because with a trust, unlike a will situation, with a trust, we've transferred during life the asset from ourself individually, usually to ourself as trustee. And so that kind of fictional transfer, I mean, that's what allows us to avoid probate. We don't need the court to prove who the next owner is. We've taken it from ourselves and given it to ourselves as trustee. And then we've provided a set of instructions for what happens after our death, and that's called the trust. And so, you know, that transfer during life is what allows us to avoid probate after death.
And then how much control do you still have with a trust? Now, we're talking about a revocable trust. So you have the revocable and the irrevocable. With the revocable, which is the most common, I would say, or at least for me, that's what I see the most. How much control does a person truly have once they set it up?
So revocable trust, you know, complete control, really, as long as you have capacity. Most estate planning stops when we lose capacity. And that can actually be a very hard thing, you know, and it is another reason to get your planning in place, especially if you're, you know, worried about a diagnosis or you have the hint of a diagnosis. You know, if you don't get your documents in place and then all of a sudden are not able to sign because you don't have the capacity to sign, you have a big problem, because then you're going to spend, you know, quite a bit of money on the guardianship process, which is an ongoing process. And so, you know, the durable power of attorney for people's care during life can be, you know, so important. So I think it might help just to go through the main documents of a will package, which is a will, a durable power of attorney, a healthcare surrogate, and a living will, at least in my office. Some offices have some differences, of course.
Okay, so list those again.
Yeah, so a will, a durable power of attorney, a healthcare surrogate, and a living will. And so I'll just kind of run through them all.
Yeah.
So the durable power of attorney is giving someone most of the authority you have by virtue of being alive. So as I mentioned before, you can buy and sell property, you can access medical records, you can hire and fire, sue, sign checks, access bank accounts. So we only recommend to give it to people you absolutely trust, mm-hmm. because there are instances where people misuse them, and you know, get sued civilly to recover the money and criminally. There was just a lady in Martin County who abused a power of attorney and got convicted because, you know, it's theft. So the agent acting under the authority of the power of attorney is a fiduciary, but it still can be hard to undo things that have been done. That being said, just a caveat on all these documents. So, you know, just as a car is the name of something, a durable power of attorney is the name, it doesn't mean they all have the same engines or parts. Okay. So, you know, you can say, well, you know, I have a durable power of attorney, but it might be from another state. It might be, you know, very old. It might not have the proper authorities. All or most of this law is the creature of state law. And so it does change. It does change from state to state. In general, if you did something proper in your state and then you move to Florida, that's going to be accepted, you know, but much like a car, it doesn't mean it's going to work really well.
So what I'm hearing you say is that if you've now relocated to Florida and you're living in Florida, but your documents were done in a different state, then it's time to meet with Alex and review those, which you can do by texting or calling 561-729-2778. That's if you text that number, we will connect you with Alex Gillen to do a review, especially if you don't either don't have these documents in place, if you would like to get a consultation. In the first meeting, is there a cost? What should they expect during that process?
Yeah, so we try to do about a half hour free, and then we charge after that.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, it's really kind of a time issue for us, right? There's only so many hours in the day we can work, and we have to make a living. We have great staff, and you know, they need to be reasonably compensated, just like, you know, all of us. So it's a time game for us. The more organized you can be, that helps. And, you know, we have an intake form on our website, and, you know, what we tell people is fill it out to the best of your ability without spending too much time on it. You know, we're looking for kind of a picture of your whole life. We want to know, you know, the people in it, and the assets and your concerns and fears and wishes. And, you know, once we take all those in, then we kind of come up with a plan for you.
So text that number, 561-729-2778, or call and leave a voicemail. Leave your name and email if you can, and we will get you in touch. We'll get you the form. We'll help you get started with the process and make it as efficient as possible for Alex and for you. So especially also if you are from out of state, again, if you don't have these documents or maybe they're old and outdated, you'd like a review, there's absolutely no reason not to do that. So, or if you're out of state, just text that number.
And what I tell people on out of state documents, you know, usually I can't look at them and say whether it was done correctly in your state or not. I don't know what your state law is usually. But if money was not a consideration, which is, of course it is for all of us, if money is not a consideration, then you of course you always update them every time when you move to a new state. And that's true if you leave Florida, because you want, I mean, part of what we're doing is we're creating efficiencies. So if you have, you know, professionally prepared, nice looking documents, that's probably going to make your life easier if one of these events come up where you need them. So I'll give one more caveat and then I'll keep running through the list if that's okay, Mindy.
Yeah, please.
Okay, so the other caveat is you can get 90% right in your will or durable power of attorney, healthcare surrogate, living will, trust. You could get 90% right, say with, you know, an online form or something like that. But if you get it 10% wrong or 1% wrong, that 1% could be fatal to the whole thing. And so that's why, you know, a lot of times it's better to have a professional who does this regularly do it. Than to, you know, take the chance that you're getting it right, because the chance that you're getting it right can be, you know, devastating on your loved ones if it doesn't work. So with those two caveats, so the durable power of attorney, we only give it to people we trust, incredibly powerful. Without it, you'll end up in the guardianship court in all likelihood. So that one is just really, really important for your care during life. The next document in the series is the healthcare surrogate. And so that is who speaks for me for medical decisions if I'm incapacitated and can't speak for myself, for the decisions I want. So if I name, you know, Mindy to speak for me, if I'm unconscious and can't make a decision between three surgeries, you know, then the doctors know that that's who I want, as opposed to, you know, a potential free for all, of people coming forward in my life saying that this is what I would want. So it just makes it easier on everyone, clear chain of command. You know, the hospital should like them, because they want to know, you know, who's speaking on your behalf. That can be especially true in relationships where there's not that legal tie, like longtime partners that aren't married. You know, from a legal perspective, you show up at the hospital and even though, you know, there's no other person closer to the patient, you know, they don't know that. So, you know, having that healthcare surrogate in place is a really, you know, good thing. And, it, you know, all of these are good family documents. I mean, sometimes people say, you know, why do estate planning? And they say it's a gift to the family, you know, but by having these things kind of settled or, you know, organized, it's going to make it easier on your loved ones in this time of immense, you know, stress and grief. the third document during life is the living will. So the living will is kind of a misnamed or a toughly named document in my view. It really deals with technology. I call it a technology document. So it came about in the 70s as our technology continued to get better and better. And, you know, we could all of a sudden keep someone alive a lot longer than nature could. And so, you know, it presents this new challenge. You know, what do we do if this person is probably not going to, you know, be alive except for all these machines? You know, at what point do we, you know, turn off the machines and let the person die a natural death? So the living will is again, kind of a good family document, because it says, you know, one, it says, I'm making the decision, not my, you know, child, not my spouse. It's not a decision collectively amongst my children. It's my decision. So it kind of shifts some of the burden. But we tell people, the hospitals around here will ask you if you have one. We tell them to say, yes, I do, and I'll provide it when it's necessary. So that way we keep it in our pocket and use it on our terms. It could change the analysis if we were in a painful situation. But, you know, for the most part, it's really there to have it be your wishes and to not leave potential chaos in your family.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which can happen.
Yeah. I mean, there's some tough stories out there, you know, where, you know, parents are split or grandparents want to do one thing or parents want to do another or children want to do another or the facility doesn't want to do something. I mean, so it can just become, you know, pretty complex from a human perspective pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, shifts the decision off of the survivors.
And the healthcare surrogate as well can create a lot of dilemmas in the family as to who's going to be in charge.
Sure. Yeah.
Somebody's incapacitated. Because one is when you're, the living will is specifically for your pull the plug kind of situation.
Yeah.
But if you're if you have dementia or you have a stroke and you're mentally, you know, impacted by that. That is where the health surrogate comes in, correct?
Yeah, incapacitation. So I think, you know, you get into a bad car accident and you're in a coma or you're just heavily medicated and you're not coming around to where you can choose your own surgery. So then all of a sudden I have somebody else, you know, choose the surgery that I would have wanted. And so I'm making that decision. I'm not just leaving it to, you know, hopefully the room of people that care about me.
Right, speaking on your behalf.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, should I use two people on this? I would like to name, you know, both of my children or something like that. And you can, I mean, you can do two, you know, co-personal representatives, healthcare surrogates, co-powers of attorney. Usually from an efficiency perspective, you know, there's drawbacks to that. Sometimes it's a good decision, but you know, sometimes it's just going to create more confusion. And then, you know, if there is some kind of a tie, right? You want to do one thing, I want to do another. Now who's going to decide? The court. And so, you know, then we've kind of lost some of the efficiencies that we hope to gain there. But those are kind of the main documents for during life. And then after death, we are, you know, our will becomes fixed and, you know, it's going to do, you know, three or four things for a lot of people. It's going to say who's in charge. Florida, we call that a personal representative. Other states call it an executor. It's going to say funeral wishes. So those might be, you know, a religious ceremony, you know, burial, cremation. We have a family plot. You know, I'd like a celebration of life, scattering of ashes. There's, you know, a lot of ways you can do it. So it's going to say that, and then it's going to say, you know, who gets my property? So you can, you know, make it specific or not, in that the way I describe it is the way a trust or a will works in this situation is it's like a bucket. At the end, you have a bucket. It's called the rest, residue, or remainder, and everything's in that bucket, and you can divide that bucket. But if you want to give something away specifically, you know, say I want to leave, you know, Mindy my car, I take it out of the bucket. Or if I want to leave $100,000 to my neighbor, you know, I can take it out of the bucket. So if we specifically give things away, then we list those, you know, somewhere in the plan. If we don't list anything specifically, everything goes in the bucket. And so sometimes people will say, you know, I'd like my bucket to go 25%, 25%, 25%, 25%, you know, but there's tons and tons of ways you can do it.
How does that liquidation process take place?
Yeah. And so that's typically the administration process. So, you know, you have a team, multiple advisors, some on tax, some on, you know, law, some on finance and securities and, you know, do we have IRAs and RMDs and inherited IRAs, and should we liquidate because we got a step up in basis? Should we, you know, how should we give it out in kind? Should, you know, I think, you know, mm-hmm. this person would rather have that lot than to have the cash equivalent. So then we need an appraisal. I mean, so there's just a lot to it. I mean, depending on, you know, what all's involved, and, you know, usually people have a lot of grief during this time.
Yeah.
Because it's, and grief shows in many different ways. You know, people handle it differently. But you know, it's usually a very hard time in a person's life.
Yeah. I can imagine.
And well, so if it's just, there's no planning, you know, so those are always the hardest because, you know, someone passed away, you know, usually it's prematurely and they didn't have anything in place. Mm-hmm. And the folks that are in charge of, you know, marshaling everything, you know, don't really have a roadmap. They don't really know what's out there. And it's just, it's intense grief and a lot of work, and that is, you know, tough. It's tough on the survivors.
Absolutely. Definitely. So with, I'm just reminded of when my grandmother passed away, which was 2008, a long time ago, but she had a lot of grandkids. I mean, there were so many of us, just like 40 grandkids, and we all thought we were the closest to her. She was like the matriarch of our family, called all of us, just very, very involved. And loved, but she had went through her house and took tape, almost like painter's tape, but the white, like you would wrap meat with, like butcher tape, I guess it's called. And just had little baggies of whether it was jewelry or the back of a picture frame or the couch. She pulled the couch out in her what we call good living room. There was a big piece of tape on there, had my uncle's name on it. Like, everything was labeled of who got what. And because of that, it was just, not only was it super special, you know, it just made all of us feel a part, but it also, it gave us something that normally we probably would never be entitled to. Like, I got this little necklace, and that I cherish that necklace more than I could ever cherish a dollar amount, right? And but as all of these grandchildren, all of her assets, really, they went to the children, her five kids. But as grandchildren, to have that was huge. Just an extra step.
Yeah.
Of a plan, of having a plan.
And it's, yeah.
And it helps with the grief. Having that already done, I think, helps the people that love you who are grieving. Because they feel, everything feels solidified and not... chaotic. I don't have to prove anything on your behalf. You've already laid it out for them. I just think it helps the peace, finding peace in that.
So I have kind of a funny story to that, and it's somewhere in the family tree, but it was an in-law, not a blood relative, but apparently they were taking labels off.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, you know,
swapping the tags
or just taking them off, and then it changes the outcome. Right. And so, we recommend against labeling.
OK.
But I mean, there's still other ways to do it. You just want to do it just on the forms.
Itemizing.
Yeah.
Writing it
and
out.
Then I always tell people, if you have something you don't use that you want someone to have, consider giving it away during life, because it's you give them the memory and the item. And I, with my own father, I have two of the exact same coin, one that he gave me you know, during life, one that he gave me, you know, after his death. And they mean different things to me because one, there's a story and there's, you know, right. kind of how it came about. And the other, it was just a thing I received.
Right. I understand. Yeah. It's a lot to think about and it's a lot to plan for. So in this, in these last few minutes that we're talking about this, how long is it, when is it appropriate for people to have a review or update their documents?
Yeah, I think the real answer is when something significant changes, whether it's law or family or life. You know, if you hit the lottery, definitely come in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, you know, if you lose a spouse, if you know, something happens with a friend or family member or child or your appointment changes, the rule of thumb is every 5 years, you know, we try to get a little more time out of that if we can. It changes at the level of life, right? So if you're, you know, 45 and you want to switch your kids' order, you know, maybe we can talk you out of that one. Because, okay. you know, you might want to switch it again in 5 more years and don't spend the money. But if you're 75, you know, or 85 and you have a change, you know, then it's probably a little more urgent. So only because, you know, things are... are different in different seasons of life.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think my rule of thumb was always like if someone passed, like a spouse passes away, then it's almost a must, right? Like they need to come and update or, because I know just, it depends on how complex, but I have some clients that have very complex layers of trust, whether it's generation skipping trust, like income trusts for the spouse and businesses, you know, you have, there's another one that I'm thinking of too, but there's a lot of different types of trust that can get simplified as people age. Sometimes the things that they had aren't necessary as they age and get deeper into retirement. And not only it's more complicated, the more they have of those things, the more complicated it is for the advisor and then also for the taxes. So if you need to simplify, I think that's a reason to come in.
Yeah. I mean, the tax thresholds are so high that I don't know the exact number, but
estate tax.
Yeah.
Right.
So I say there's 4 ways to tax an estate. You can do it at the state or federal level, and then you can have an estate tax or an inheritance tax. An estate tax is the value of the assets that the person that passed away. An inheritance tax is the value of the assets received from an estate. And so you could tax either of those. Florida doesn't have either of those. Federally, we do not have an inheritance tax. And then federally, your estate tax threshold today is 15 million. So if you're under 15 million, there's no estate tax. So a large percentage of people, I'm not sure, 99.5, somewhere in there. And that doubles with a married couple.
How does insurance, you know, I know, like, for example, life insurance, annuities, these insurances go directly to, they kind of bypass these
yeah.
topics, right?
So I had an estate planning attorney tell me once that insurance is very good at, you know, coming up with ways to, you know, create products. And that's true in that you can, I mean, some insurance isn't taxable as income. And so if you have an insurance policy owned by a trust and then the trust pays out directly, it can really help some families in situations where, you know, maybe there's tax on a family farm or... you know, they need some liquidity because most of their assets are tied up in a closely held business or something like that. So, yes, there are tools out there where you can, you know, diversify the flows of money to meet the needs of the families.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely seen how insurance, especially with or in my experience of someone passes away, that the life, you know, the funds from the life insurance or the funds from the annuity seem to be processed and received quickly, very quickly for, and if other things get tied up in probate, right? So sometimes that's like a easy way to get access to funds with just a death certificate versus going through the court.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
it's going to function more automatically.
And then listing beneficiaries, right? So IRAs, whether it's your IRA or your just your brokerage accounts, listing those, taking the time to list those. I see so many times where with financial advisors, the financial statements, they've never listed a beneficiary. Or even if the client said, well, this is who I want to leave it to, it just never was documented because it's not required, right? But you can miss that step easily. So I always tell people, review, make sure, call your custodian. If it's Charles Schwab, if it's Fidelity, wherever your assets are held, call them and find out who's listed as the beneficiary. Or if it's even your trust or things, you know, has that process been really implemented and worked itself all the way out? Because sometimes people have a trust, but then it's never funded.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big one. I think the way to think about it is, you know, each asset we have to have a plan for. And so if it's a beneficiary form, that's great. There are some reasons beneficiary forms don't work. Like, you don't want to have minor children inheriting on a beneficiary form, because a minor children in most circumstances can only inherit up to $15,000. Without having to have a guardian. And so by routing it through a trust, that can be a better option. I mean, everything in estate planning is trade-offs. You get one thing, you give up another. So it's custom.
Perfect. Well, definitely take advantage of Alex Gillen, and thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners appreciated it too. But you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show. Tune in next Wednesday, 4 to 5. And remember, you can text 561-729-2778. Text your name, text your email. You can go on our website at mindymolina.com. Thank you, Alex Gillen, for being on the show with us. And remember, God loves you, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Thanks for listening. Join us next week. And remember, if you have any concerns about your financial picture, please reach out to us at 561-729-2778. There's a no obligation consultation. All you have to do is text or call 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us on our website at www.mindymolina.com. Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance has been protecting the retirement of families for 15 years. Information provided by Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance and/or its affiliates are for informational purposes only and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Get your financial report at 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us at www.mindymolina.com.
Praising God today for our salvation. And the one and only that points us to the Father, Yeshua ben Elohim. Thank you.
so